Most financial advisors follow the industry playbook. Elite advisors choose a different path. I'm Sten Morgan. Welcome to the Elite Financial Advisor Podcast, where top advisors share the strategies, mindsets, and the stories behind building a better business, adding more value, and the courage to grow through resistance. Because becoming an elite advisor is not about working harder and longer. It's about choosing a better path.
So I started my career in the industry, you know, in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, you know, on the cover of Investment Advisor magazine.
Like if I can be in a room with somebody and make them feel something. And so I feel like I resisted it during my career because I was like, no, the best advisor should win, the one with the greatest ideas. But then you step out of the vacuum and you live in the real world where it's people you're appealing to who have stories.
And there's nothing wrong with knowing the technical skills, and they're important to the job. But at the end of the day, if you can't communicate with the client, the technical skills are useless. While growth does not solve all capacity issues, growth does speed up the pressure to learn it.
Welcome to the Elite Advisor Podcast. Today, we will be hanging out with Angie Herbers. Herbers & Company is one of the top consultants to RIA firms, financial advisors, and their firm helps people from birth to exit. Angie has an amazing viewpoint of the industry, trends she's seeing, the biggest sticking points and points of resistance for advisors. So I'm very lucky that we get to hang out with Angie today. She's going to share a lot of great insight with us. Angie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's cold. I'm in Colorado today. It's a cold day in Colorado, but
oh goodness,
glad to be here. Yeah,
you bet. Yeah, we just had an ice storm in Nashville, which I'd never seen anything like it, and so now we're finally warming back up, which is good.
Yeah, I did hear that across the country. We have, I have a niece in Nashville. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, so great.
Well, I appreciate you being here. Our audience is advisors, business owners, pretty much the people you hang out with all the time. So this will be fun.
Every day, all day, yeah. For nearly 25 years now. I'm aging myself. But yeah.
You started when you were five. I love it. It's great.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I'd love to get a little deeper into like what was the first thing in the industry that caught your attention? Obviously, you've accomplished a lot, been recognized a lot, but kind of the origin story of Angie. I'd love for our listeners to know that a little more.
Well, it's hard to pinpoint because it wasn't just one thing.
One moment.
Yeah, there was a lot of moments. I had a very unique upbringing in the industry. I've, you know, come to learn, but I graduated from a CFP registered program. I also have a degree in the human sciences and then a minor in business. But way back then, I'll save the date for you. It's been decades ago, but way back then in the CFP programs, they started a national competition among all the CFP schools. And I happened to be selected as one of the top six. And then we ended up going to World Trade Tower 2 and presenting the final, this was back in 2001, presenting our final financial plan that we had to create. And we're creating it from, you know, our calculators and Excel. And I presented it and I just happened to win that competition with a team of two other people. And So I started my career in the industry, you know, in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, you know, on the cover of Investment Advisor magazine. So I had a unique jump into the industry, but really what changed me back then and turned me toward consulting is the career track of young advisors. You know, I see this even still today, that the young people that are coming out of these CFP programs are brilliant. They have a lot of communication knowledge. Sometimes they've been in investing clubs. They know investments, even I'm shocked at the alternatives that they know about and the knowledge that they have. But for me, way back then, my goal was to be the best I could be and to be brilliant in what I was doing. And what I learned is what I could be most brilliant at is teaching the industry, which back then the average size firm was 300,000 in revenue. So, and they were giving firms away. There wasn't the valuations that we have today. And I decided that my most brilliant me was teaching people about the students coming out of CFP programs that were like me. And I ended up going back to graduate school and starting a little consulting business on the side. And I never believed that Herbers and Company would become what it is today. It wasn't ever a goal to have a, you know, a mid-sized to large consulting firm in the space, but that's what it became. And still today, you know, I had someone ask me the other day, they said, "Do you ever get tired of consulting?" And I said, "If I'm tired of it, I will retire." But still today, I love helping financial advisors and business owners. Back then, we were just human capital. Today, we're birth to exit. So I've had this beautiful career of being able to see these small firms that now are the largest in the country grow through the consulting of Herbers and Company, basically from birth to exit. And it's a fun, it's a very fun job. And I feel like myself and now our much larger team, we do brilliant work every day. And we're happy to give that back to the industry.
Yeah. Going back to the financial plan that won the award, was it the content that won? Was it the presentation that won? If you were to look back, like, do you remember what put it over the edge?
Well, I know what put it over the edge for me, but I'm sure that the judges, I honestly don't know that any of the judges are actually still alive. Again, I'm aging myself, but there, I had a situation in my own family. It's sort of a sad story where my mom had passed away before I had gone to college, and I had gone through with my dad and my brothers this estate unraveling. And the financial plan that we developed was for a family. I remember the plan really well.
Wow.
And when we got to the competition, so that we got to New York and we were presenting, we were to present our plan, they, the day before we presented the plan, they put this estate planning issue right in the plan. So they said, we have to adjust our plan before we present it. The next day, we literally had 24 hours to adjust our plan. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to be something I had personally gone through. So the team, we decided, I should find that recording. It's recorded somewhere. But the team decided that I would present most of the plan and focus specifically on the estate planning issue. And then they would take the rest of the plan. So the presentation, it, you know, the financial plan was difficult. We had to go through all the numbers of it, but I do think that there was a personal element inside of me that could relate to the presentation. Plus, I had an awesome team. Like, I wouldn't have won that on my own. I had two awesome, one person who's still in the industry. The team, our team was just great. So I think the team won it. It just, by random circumstance, I had gone through the change that they had made in the plan at the last minute, and I presented it. So,
I'd be curious, in my journey as an advisor, I went from, I'm not naturally the life of the party. I don't know a bunch of people with money, so I just want to be a great advisor. Like, I'm going to bring the technical skill to close business. Over time, though, I've realized, like, wow, I need to be a great communicator. Like, if I can be in a room with somebody and make them feel something. And so I feel like I resisted it during my career because I was like, no, the best advisor should win, the one with the greatest ideas. But then you step out of the vacuum and you live in the real world where it's people you're appealing to who have stories. I'd be curious, in kind of all you do now, how important is communication skills, style, practice to be a successful advisor?
It's very coincidental that we're having this conversation. I literally had a client appointment this morning, and it was somewhat of an intense client appointment. And the reason it was intense is because they were having quite a lot of turnover of their associate advisors, their younger advisors. And, you know, this is a topic that we touched today, but it's not, you know, it took me back to the beginning is what it did. And I said to them, the reason you have turnover of your associate advisors is because you're choosing in your training program to teach all the technical skills first. And there's nothing wrong with knowing the technical skills, and they're important to the job. But at the end of the day, if you can't communicate with the client, the technical skills are useless.
Yeah.
So I have always been a big proponent over the last two decades of communication skills first. Most advisory firms say, well, we can't teach communication. It has to be natural. And yes, that's just simply not true.
Yeah.
We learn, the first thing that we learn as babies is communication. And the easiest way we learn communication is through observation. And so if you're trying to build up associate advisors or young advisors and you're putting them in a back room to only do technical work, you're not helping your practice at the highest level. You're actually hurting it because you're not building the capacity within the firm so that that younger advisor or career changer can work with clients. You're just sticking them in a back room that's, you know, learning great technical skills. But at the end of the day, the best way to train any advisor or young advisor, improve your skills. Even today as a consultant, I'm thinking all the time about how I can communicate better, how I can be a better consultant through communication and connecting with our client firms. But associate advisors must observe communication. They must sit there and they must watch and they must see and they must understand and be able to read those emotions of clients. And that's especially important today when we're, you know, when we have political issues, when there's high and lows in the marketplace, when, you know, we're going through massive change, both in the workplace and at home. So I probably went too long on communication. But
no, that's great. I love it.
Long about communication. And I can argue someone, or I can debate someone to the very end, especially clients, about communication. If there's any young advisor out there who's looking for a career and they want to expedite that career, the number one question they should be asking advisory firms when they are interviewing is, how are you going to show me how to communicate to a client?
Love that. We actually give a case study to potential hires. We give them our internal software we use to build plans that we built. And we said, build us a plan. And then you're presenting it. I got advice a while ago, like to the idea of like, hey, you interviewed well, like, let's just see if this thing works out versus like, no, I need to see you in action. And we just had an advisor present a week ago, and he did great, not because he nailed it, but because he brought good energy. He was curious in the process. He wasn't frustrated externally when we intentionally left a little something out. We didn't kind of pave the path for him to do it. I'm just as excited and passionate about with you, because in my story it was the opposite. It was like, hey, call a bunch of people, learn how to sell a product and go get them. And I'm like, is that the only path? Like, is that the only option? Or maybe that's just the only one I was given. And so in hindsight, man, I wish somebody would have grabbed me and said, there's a different path. It's harder. It's uncomfortable, but you will be a curator of great ideas, a great communicator. And oh, by the way, you'll be technically good at your job, but it felt flipped in my experience.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, I experienced that when I entered the industry. I think a lot of people still experience that today. I will give a shout out to that career path. There are hundreds of different career paths today, many more than there were way back when. I think all career paths are good so long as you are focused on the client, learning the client, learning how to talk to the client. And if you do those things and, you know, you choose the client first, you can't lose in those scenarios. I mean, unless you're just a bad advisor, then it would be a little bit different. But
sure. How did that call end up?
My client call?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Were they receptive?
They have to give, you have to give them time. I mean.
That's right.
It is much, much easier to write a training program that has all the technical skills listed out than it is to say, just put your associates in every meeting that's happening in the firm.
That's right.
The simplest answer is not always the one that people want to hear.
Yeah.
Because it requires a change in thinking about how you develop people, how you build skills, how you build confidence, how you build client communication. So,
yeah. As soon as I try never to go into a meeting alone anymore. I spent a lot of time on a yellow pad, hoping I didn't miss a note while I was trying to teach and gather information. Yeah, that's one of our value props. If you come work here, like you're watching me do it. You know, you're gonna practice before meetings on the whiteboard. Like, but I think as I hear you explain, I'm like, yeah, that is more work. Like, I think sometimes the, hey, come in here, sit here, do my to-dos as they come up, like, is a little more in line with not disrupting the schedule I've become used to. But, like, there is some element of, like, to level up, I have to change something. And change is hard. So I'm curious, as you coach firms, is there a requirement for you to work with them that you're like, you have to be willing to change something, like, today? Because you know you're going to find 10 things immediately? Or what would that process look like?
Well, let me just tell you about Herbers & Company. We're an independent, we take an objective view of practices. We're birth to exit, and we cover every practice management area except compliance.
Nice.
So we have a robust ability to do a lot of different things. And no different than a financial advisor looks mostly at a client situation holistically and identifies areas that the client didn't even know of. We look at a practice holistically and identify areas that the firm, you know, didn't know were a problem or even needed a solution. So, I mean, the long-winded answer to your question is to work with Herbers & Company, there is no requirement. We will go at the pace you want to go. If you want to grow really fast, which we've had firms grow very quickly, meaning like 0 to 10 million in a couple of years in revenue, not assets. And we've had other firms grow really slow, and change management is harder for them, and letting go is harder for them. So the client sets the pace. But at the end of the day, you know, I think this is a good place to talk about coaching versus consulting. Mm-hmm. We're going to coach you at some level to get you to see what we're proposing to you. But at the end of the day, we're consultants. We're going to give you a hard recommendation. And it is the choice of the client to take that recommendation or not, or to come back and say, you know, I need something different, or I can't make that decision now. And we will walk with them throughout that process.
Yeah.
Last but not least, I think one of the greatest benefits of Herbers & Company is, you know, 90% of our clients, unless they're huge firms and they need a project, work with us year after year after year. I don't want to say that it's a retainer relationship. We don't desire for you to stay forever, right? We desire for you to come and get what you need and go. But most of the clients end up staying. And the reason that they end up staying is because, just like a financial advisor, we're helping them make investments in their business that ultimately return.
Yeah.
And that's the point of a consulting firm. Like,
sure.
Why would you come to us and hire us if there wasn't going to be some ROI on that?
Yeah.
And we found that because of our knowledge, experience, the depth of firms that we can work with, all structures of firms, all sizes of firms, most firms come to us because they want to build momentum, and they need knowledge that they may not have, and they need change management that they may not know how to navigate through. And we we have years and years of experience and lots of consultants that can help guide them through that. So,
raise your hand if you've ever been to a financial advisor event that didn't really change you. Maybe the speakers were interesting, maybe you had a few good conversations, but when you got home, nothing about your business actually improved. I've been to a lot of these events over the years. Events full of inspiration, but short on practical strategies you can actually use. The advisor of the future knows how to clearly communicate their value, prospect with intention, and deliver financial planning advice clients actually understand. That's why we built How to Charge Live. This isn't an event built around hype or theory. It's an event built for advisors by advisors. 1,000 advisors have attended How to Charge Live, including advisors with more than 20 years of business experience. And over, we hear the same thing. This is the best advisor event I've ever attended. I want to personally invite you to join me at my office in Franklin, Tennessee this October for 2 days focused on helping you build more valuable business. I'm going to walk you through my entire process, how to communicate your value well, how to add value through fee-based financial planning, and how to create a framework to help you scale your business faster. Seats are limited, so visit howtochargelive.com to secure your seat now. Is it fair to say that the most successful advisors you've worked with, is there a common theme of like heavy investment into consulting, personal improvement, like versus, you know, they're trying to fund their own Roths and their own 401ks, but yet operate within like a vacuum for their own ideas?
Well, it's hard to answer that question, right? Because we only see the ones that invest in their companies, right?
Sure.
Because they're investing in us. So I can't say that the ones that don't invest versus the ones that do invest are, you know, one is greater or lesser.
Yeah.
What I do know is that there is a distinctive difference between people who hire consulting and those who and how they use it. And let me explain that to you. So I've had the great pleasure, you know, if I didn't have confidentiality policies, I wish I could name names, but I've had the great pleasure of sitting in boardrooms, sitting in offices as some of the best financial advisor leaders in this country. Many that I've learned from and many that I admire. What sets those leaders apart from basically everybody else is one very simple thing. And that is when they identify a problem, they don't wait to solve it. They don't get their team together and have strategy sessions and go out and see if they can find, you know, someone to solve the problem. They don't have lots of meetings and lots of conversations. They get busy and they solve it right there. Our whole system is actually designed around these types of leaders. They generally solve their problems within 2 weeks. They don't, you know, have worksheets that they go to. They don't have a whole, I mean, they have somewhat of a hierarchy of decision making in their practices. They don't have consensus. They don't wait to solve them. And last but not least, the reason that they can do that is because they understand uncertainty. They don't know any more than any other leader that's leading a firm. They don't have knowledge. You know, some of them are more skilled than others, but none of us out there have more knowledge than the other person. It's how we use the knowledge. So a lot of the systems in Herbers and Company are built around those leaders. Move quickly, make decisions quickly, but know that we're all navigating uncertainty. And that any decision that you make, you can make another decision to either reverse or enhance the decision that you've made prior. So the goal is, and very simply, keep moving. Because the minute you get stalled in your decision making, the minute you have to sit down and, you know, fill out a worksheet or some business plan or write a a massive strategy, you're not actually on the ground solving the problem. You're just pretending to solve the problem through meetings and talking and all of that.
What are you looking for when you meet with advisors? What are maybe the top few trigger moments that get them to initiate an engagement with you? Is it a personnel issue? Is it systems breaking? What are you typically finding are kind of the top few pain points that get painful enough for somebody to finally say, I need help?
Again, I'm a consultant. It depends. And it's answer that question.
Angie, you're consulting me right now. Just kidding.
Right. Honestly, it's like, if you get down to the simplicity of it all, it's when they have pain. It's when they have pain in employees. It's when they have pain in growth. The industry underestimates how much pain growth causes. Mm. In other words, we don't have a lot of practices come to us and say, we have a problem growing. We have a lot of practices come to us and say, we have outgrown us and we don't know the next place to go. So, you know, the reality is they come to us when there is a pain point. I'll give you an example. We have an online scheduler on our website. Guaranteed every Saturday afternoon, guaranteed every Sunday night, there is a prospective appointment being scheduled on the website automatically. There's some sort of pain point that they've reached. The common ones are very simply people, a personnel issue, a capacity issue. They've outgrown a turnover issue where they've lost somebody that's really important to them. Partnership problems, their partners can't agree. Most recently, because there's so many changes in AI and the competition for new clients is getting a little bit harder, most especially in the high net worth. Advisors are now paying attention to the pain points in their client experience and the pain points in and or their lack of marketing. And then last but not least, this is more rare than, but it's actually speeding up. Herbers and Company does M&A work. We do it differently than most all of the other consulting firms out there. And the vast majority of the M&A work we do with clients who we've actually helped build their practices. But lately, I think that the industry is pressuring advisors on M&A. So we have a lot now of advisors reaching out to us saying, how can you help me determine whether I should sell my business now, merge with another firm, sort of attach to another firm, consolidate with another firm, or help me find resources so that this job of growth isn't so hard?
Yeah.
So those are some of the key areas. Now we have unique things. We have people reach out for unique things all the time. But at the end of the day, people come to us because they have some sort of pain point and they've reached. We have a joke internally that is like, we are the last place people go because they will try everything else and then they can't find the solution. They're tired of trying. They just want someone to tell them what to do, not necessarily try to coach them through to the end point.
Sure.
And they come to us and then they don't have to go anywhere else. We can take them from where they are to all the way to exit if that's what their goal is, or they can hang around and we can help them forever.
Yeah. As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in.
If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
From your unique vantage point and all your experience, what is the shifts that you would say we should all pay attention to? Is it the aging advisor population, where those clients are going to go? Is it the asset shift, you know, to women that's playing out? Is it the AI? Like, what are you most paying attention to in the industry? Is it financial planning now, which that's a hot button thing that all the firms are approving and pushing? What do you think?
I've never had anyone ask me this question, but I love this question. I probably won't answer like the rest of the industry.
Sure.
I'm watching two things really closely. I'm watching what the large firms are doing. There is, in my opinion, a race for market share on the 25 million and above client. And if they gain that market share, they will grow very quickly, and thus they will have big margins to invest in the mass affluent or other markets. So back when I started, you know, finding high net worth, ultra high net worth clients was a whole lot easier than it is today. Mm-hmm. And this race, there seems to be a race to $1 trillion under management. I've been through like all these phases. When I started my career, it was a race to 100 million, and then it was a race to 1 billion, and then it was a race to like 5 billion. And now all of a sudden it's a race to who gets $1 trillion. But, you know, from a client perspective, whoever gains market share on 25 million and above is going to lead, in my opinion. So I'm watching all the large firms on their client allocation, their assets, what they're marketing to. And there seems to be this race to for the 25 million and above client. Mm. And if that happens, the environment will change on a lot of different levels. So that's number one. Number two, I'm watching valuations, because, you know, valuations in the past, call it 20 years, you know, they've been rising consistently. I mean, rising to me is giving away the practice, which is what firms did when I started, to significant multiples. But I think that there is a point, and I don't like to predict the future, but I can sort of see, based on all the work that we're doing with advisory firms, I think there is going to be a point where valuations of firms level out, except for planning-led integrated firms. And what I mean by that is those who are focusing on planning first, and those who have chosen to integrate other services into their planning wealth management model. It's only a matter of time until we see the fee structure. I don't think it's actually going to fall down, but we see more of an evolution of the AUM fee structure. And that requires diversification of revenues. That is directly in line with integrating your firm. So those two things I've been watching very, very closely for nearly 3 years.
Nice.
For the smaller mid-sized firms, I'll say one other thing about this, because that ties mainly to the large firms. The large firms usually lead the economic environment for the advisory practices from my perspective over the past 25 years. There's a lot of rhetoric about mid-sized firms not being around. You know, the mid-sized firm won't exist, the small firm won't exist anymore. All of that's just talk. The mid-sized firms are becoming more valuable than any other firm. And the reason that is because they can deliver a higher level of service. Mm-hmm. The, you know, at some point you're going to run out of multi-billion dollar firms to buy.
Yeah.
There is still very few barriers of entry to start an advisory practice. And there are quite a lot of people, and we see this in economic, you know, economic environments. One of the first clues of economic environments sort of leveling out is you have a lot of people applying to law schools and medical schools. And in this case, accountants and financial advisors, we're seeing enrollments increase. So that's great for capacity, which is a concern. One concern I also have, but not the thing I'm watching as close. But the point I'm making is you have to watch the large firms to get an idea of what's actually happening. They seem to be closer to the present than most all other firms. And all the talk about the mid-sized firm, from my opinion, and the smaller firms is just not true.
Got it.
I didn't hit capacity, which is also a big
issue. Sure. Yeah, no, this is great.
But capacity is a concern for me because we're seeing, you know, we have a big group of people who are retiring. We also don't have enough talent coming into the industry. But my greatest concern on capacity is more around client service.
Mm.
I think advisory firms, because they feel like they can't train and build talent fast enough or at the level that they want to, they have their advisors work with too many clients. That's the bottom line. Or they don't hire fast enough. And that capacity and the issues around capacity and what people can do takes me back to the very beginning of my career. Capacity's always been an issue. It's been a growing issue. It will continue to grow.
Yeah.
We'll be watching it close over the next 10 years because capacity will be impacted by AI and the advancements of AI, what the large firms do and in market segments, what the valuations will do, and what enrollment will do based on whatever the economic environment is. So,
yeah. I think I reading some of your stuff, the idea that like what will break when you grow. I know I've personally experienced that. I was like, man, we almost have to stop growing for a season until I can increase capacity. And in our order, it felt like I had to boost up our operations before I added advisors. So that like, is our operations a couple steps ahead of us? So by the time I bring people in and we start adding more clients, we're not trying to increase the ability to deliver financial advice at the same time we're trying to increase the ability to like sustain the input. What's your initial reaction to that?
Well, first, we love simple questions, and we use that question a lot. We ask our clients a lot, what will break if you grow anymore? Or what will break in a year from now? Or what will break when you have 1,000 clients? Or what will break when you have, in some cases, 10,000 clients? So we like to, you know, we like to go deep with our advisory firms to find out what's hurting them today, but then we like to go wide, and that question goes really wide. It asks a hard, you know, first principles question. Tell us the truth on what you think is going to break when you get way out there, because if we know that's true, or we have research to back that fear will be true, we can actually solve it in the present. So let me address like the operations versus capacity. There's all different types of capacity. There's operational capacity. Mm-hmm. There's client capacity. There's financial capacity. There's leadership capacity. I could keep naming all the types of capacity. What most of the industry focuses on is client capacity. How many clients can one advisor or how many clients can one team work with? That is a very small part of capacity.
Mm-hmm.
as you go along the growth path of an advisory firm, you hit an operational capacity issue. You can't really add any more clients until you beef up the operations. The next phase is actually leadership capacity. Can the leaders and the founders or those who are running this firm actually think faster? Can they lead faster? Can they learn faster the leadership function? Can they add executive talent that's as good as them or smarter than them? Do they have any ego around the leadership? Do they work in consensus? So after leadership capacity, then you get into all other areas of capacity, one being client capacity. But here's the trick. The trick is just keep adding advisors and not worry about the issues that you're going to eventually reach. Because while growth does not solve all capacity issues, growth does speed up the pressure to learn it. So if you focus on, no matter if it's really fast growth or really slow growth, if you continue to focus on growth, however you define it, that movement will put pressure on everything else. And first and foremost, direct revenue, which is those who can serve revenue and give advice, is your easiest and safest hire. What's sort of crazy to me about the industry is that's not what the industry, most leaders do. What they do is they say, it's much easier for me to hire a support person here and a support person there and another support person over here than it is for me to make the commitment to hire another advisor, whether they're scared of managing another colleague or leading another colleague. At the end of the day, all those support people don't expand capacity. They actually make leadership capacity and management capacity and operational capacity a whole lot harder. Yeah. So if your default is always, I have a problem, hire another advisor or hire an associate advisor that I can put in front of clients within 18 months and train them really well in communication. If that becomes your default, most everything else gets easier. But that's not how advisors operate.
Yeah.
They operate on high support ratios, and that's not the goal.
That's helpful. That's very direct feedback. I hope everyone listening is receiving that, because that's a challenge to me as well. There's so many things we can do that feel good. Probably some business book is saying good job, but it's probably avoiding creating some of that pressure that reveals the next challenge we need to solve.
I'm curious to know why it's hard for you.
I think there was something about my experience getting into the business. All I saw was these kind of heavy, operationally heavy firms. And all I heard was, it's really hard to find good advisors. And then I took a path at one point where I was like, hey, I have a cool office space. I have a good operations team that has, you know, more capacity than I'm currently filling. I'm just going to welcome some advisors in. And so I had like four standalone siloed advisors coming and going as they please. And I'm like, oh wait, our culture is falling apart because Jim's always late and Mike doesn't have any ideas. You know, I'm like, oh no, I just created, this isn't a business. This isn't a culture. And so then I had to unwind that to say, okay, what does it look like to build a more of a team-based advisory practice where we all have a common goal? What does it look like to build culture? And so I think it's some of these things that just based on my story, some things I thought were true that I'm realizing are not, but I have to overcome that resistance.
I think sometimes, so I love that you shared your story, and I asked that question specifically to vet out whether or not your story was traditional, and it is very, it's a very traditional story. So most advisor leaders, they add the support, then they feel more comfortable adding the silo advisors, then they realize their culture is coming down because they have no consistency of brand or no consistency of client experience. So then you're carrying all this brand risk. And then they walk it back and they start to think about culture, building the culture, hiring advisors in, and training processes and procedures. There is a ton that you learn by going through that process. Yeah. What, and I'm sure you could probably add more insight here than I can, but what I've never understood is why advisors have to take the hard path.
Sure.
So we know that the path is actually very simple. It is, you are an advisor, hire another advisor. You're probably going to lose that advisor. Don't worry about that. Hire another advisor. You might lose that advisor too. Hire another advisor and then another advisor and then another advisor. Because here's the thing. If you keep hiring advisors, your concentration risk goes down. In other words, the more advisors you have, the less fear you have about losing the client or potentially losing the revenue. So first step, reduce concentration risk. And the first step to go through is reduce concentration risk on yourself, meaning how many clients you are carrying compared to the rest of your firm or to the rest of your group. I will empathize, though. I'm also a business owner of a professional services practice. I ran solo for nearly 7 years and intentionally did not grow my business. It is very difficult to bring in and to get a mindset around bringing in someone who is your equal and someone who is like you and someone who just might be better than you. What I learned in the process is that was just fear. Fear of like, they might take the clients. Fine, try. Like, you don't have the brand supporting you. So focus on the brand. I think if that message can get across to advisors, they will have a different view on their practice. It's not the easier path. The easier path is just to hire a bunch of support people. The harder path is to hire someone who's smarter than you. And once you move past that path, I can tell you I moved past that path years ago and I will never go back. My life is, you know, our practice is great because you bring people in that you can learn from that are smarter than you, that respect you. You build a great team together. You have, when you add clients or you have huge, for us, you have huge potential, huge exits. And you look at that and you say, wow, I didn't do that on my own. I did that with other really smart people I'm surrounded by. It goes back to the principle, who you surround yourself by will be who you become.
Yeah.
And it's true in a business. Surround yourself with other people, especially other advisors who are just as smart.
Yeah.
Smarter.
Well said. Thank you, Angie. This was fun. We'll have to keep doing this. This is great.
Yeah, I appreciate the conversation. Thanks for having me. And good luck to you. And always appreciate your podcast. Our clients reference it a lot. And it's been nice to talk to you. So
sounds good. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Thanks, Angie.